Brett Douglas grew up feeling like an outsider, the kid who sang Jesus Christ Superstar while others recited nursery rhymes, who wore Barry Manilow t-shirts when his peers worshipped Van Halen. This sense of otherness primed him for what came next. At 12, he discovered his parents' marijuana stash and transformed it into a business opportunity, selling to classmates. "Almost overnight, I transformed from unknown loser to king of seventh grade," he writes. This early connection between substances and social acceptance became the foundation of his identity. Weekend adventures with friends Richie and Burgess established a pattern of substance-fueled mischief. But everything changed in that 7-Eleven parking lot when his friend Dana pulled out cocaine and needles. While his friends declined, Brett eagerly accepted. He describes that first intravenous hit as the love of my life, the moment he crossed through a door that operates like a heart valve. Once passed through, there was no going back. What begins as experimentation becomes a life-defining force. That first needle marks the beginning of a decades-long battle where drugs will eventually trump everything: family, career, morality, and even survival itself. Brett's story is remarkable for his ability to maintain success while battling severe addiction. At Applebee's, he became a valued employee and formed close friendships, all while injecting cocaine during shifts, sometimes with visible track marks. As manager of his father's pawn shop, Brett modernized operations and increased profits while secretly stealing $10,000 monthly to fund his habit, using drugs 5 times daily in the bathroom. His relationship with Paula mirrored this duality. Their romance, fueled by ecstasy, Paula's happy pill, revolved around weekend drug use at clubs. Even at their wedding, Brett appeared embalmed after a 60-hour cocaine binge. Brett's double life demonstrates how appearances can be deceiving. Behind every successful facade might lie hidden struggles. Brett's addiction followed a classic path of escalation, starting with only one Lortab a day, which he considered the perfect drug for energy and productivity. He soon required 15 pills daily. His tolerance led him to stronger opioids, eventually injecting oxycodone and Dilaudid. The consequences were swift and severe. One night, intoxicated, he crashed Paula's Lincoln Navigator into a concrete barrier and attempted to flee, the damaged radiator dragging beneath the car. His moral descent reached its nadir when he stole $400 from his teenage son Devin's hard-earned savings, prompting Devin to call him a crackhead piece of shit before leaving with his sister Jordan. Even worse, Brett depleted Jordan's $11,000 college fund, money Paula had accumulated through 15 years of extra shifts, in a week-long drug binge. What begins as a single pill can transform into unthinkable actions, eroding not just health, but fundamental values. Brett examines what he calls the dark corridor, the progressive erosion of moral boundaries during addiction. He presents it as a series of lines he never thought he'd cross, yet ultimately did. "I have never used public assistance. I have never lost a business. I have never stolen from my children. I have never committed statutory rape, accepting sex for crack from someone who was 14. He identifies 3 core principles of addict thinking. More is better. The drug of choice is simply more. The only time that matters is now. Yesterday's high means nothing compared to today's fix. And consequences are not real. The immediate high always overshadows future repercussions." When friends died of overdoses, his first thought wasn't grief, but, "I wish I could get some of that shit." Just enough to nearly kill him, but not quite. This dark reality shows how thoroughly addiction rewires the brain, overriding fundamental values and instincts. Unlike typical addiction stories with one rock bottom leading to recovery, Brett's journey had multiple catastrophic events. After an arrest involving drugs and a handgun, he attempted home detox, suffering through 3 days of withdrawal that he called the demon. His first treatment at the Friary brought temporary peace. For the first time in decades, I felt no urge to get high, he writes. However, he quickly relapsed after meeting Barbie in treatment. Following jail time and another recovery attempt, Brett achieved significant progress. He built a successful computer business, immersed himself in AA, worked the 12 steps, and led meetings at rehab centers. This stability lasted 4 years. Then a single lore tab triggered the worst 5 years of my life. His business collapsed, his children left after he stole from them, and his relationship with Paula devolved into shared addiction. After losing their home, Brett's despair led to a suicide attempt in a motel bathroom. The path to recovery isn't linear. It's marked by promising starts, devastating setbacks, and the recognition that healing is a lifelong journey. Brett's final recovery begins in a psychiatric ward's concrete cell after his suicide attempt. Staring at the blank wall, he realizes, "I put this wall here," finally acknowledging his role in creating his circumstances. During work release, Brett washes dishes at Cowgirls Restaurant. This mundane position becomes therapeutic, providing space for reflection while rebuilding his sense of responsibility. Brett discovers drugs weren't his primary problem, but his solution to the Brett problem, masking deeper issues of low self-worth, disconnection, and poor emotional regulation. His recovery centers on making amends through maintaining sobriety for his children and ex-wife and committing to repay every stolen dollar. "These payments aren't for them, but for me," he explains, "to close that chapter and find peace." Transformation emerges not through grand epiphanies, but humble moments, washing dishes, making restitution payments, or sitting with uncomfortable emotions rather than fleeing them. As Brett prepares for release from his final incarceration, he confronts the devastating toll. $750,000 stolen, shattered relationships, and a mass of nightmarish memories. Beyond financial losses lie missed birthdays, broken promises, and irretrievable family moments. Yet amid this wreckage, Brett finds hope through his children. His son Devin's song lyrics, woven throughout the memoir, reveal a young man processing deep wounds while seeking light and darkness, speaking of shadows cast by absent fathers, but refusing to be defined by them. Brett's story reveals addiction's insidious progression from recreational use to a cycle of shame, isolation, and desperate attempts at normalcy. His recovery demands more than abstinence. It requires brutal honesty about past actions, acceptance of damage caused, and daily recommitment to spiritual and emotional health. The path forward offers new chances for redemption with each passing day, one choice, one conversation, one step at a time. Rock bottom, Brett discovers, isn't the end of the story. It's where the most important chapter begins.